chapter 13 and also chapter 32. Coming to the book of Numbers, Israel had dwelt in Egypt for 430 years. 400 of those were lived as slaves in affliction, which is a type of the spiritual bondage of the unsaved. God would redeem Israel out of this bondage, would do so by using Moses in a miraculous way, and also by using the applied blood of the sacrificial lambs, bringing them through the Red Sea on dry ground, a type of salvation. And he had for them a promised land of blessing, the land of Canaan, which is a type of a new life and the appropriation of it. By way of background to the book of Numbers, after coming out of Egyptian bondage, we read in Exodus 16 and verse 1 that Israel, about 1 month later, arrived in the wilderness of Sin, and about a month after that, they would arrive at Mount Sinai. So it's been 2 months since they've been delivered from Egypt. And then they would remain at Mount Sinai for 11 months. So by the time we get to the book of Numbers, Israel has been at the base of Sinai for nearly a year. It is there that they received the laws that are recorded in Exodus and Leviticus. And if you were to compare Exodus 40 verse 17 with Numbers 1 and verse 1, you see that the book of Numbers commences 1 month after the tabernacle had been erected, which is about 13 months after Israel's exodus from Egypt. So the book of Numbers begins with God instructing Moses to take a census of the males 20 years and older from all the tribes with the exception of the Levites. And according to Numbers 10, verses 11 and 12, 19 days later, the Israelites would set out for that promised land, the land of Canaan. And according to Deuteronomy 1, verse 2, this would be should have been about an 11-day journey. We know it wasn't. The book of Numbers summarizes the experience of the children of Israel in the wilderness during the 39 years following their departure from Mount Sinai. And though the incidents of the book cover almost 39 years, 37 of those years are mostly ignored. Chapters 10 through 19 are a record of the year after the exodus from Egypt, and everything after chapter 20, verse 1, is really the 40th year after the exodus from Egypt. So in chapters 1 through 25, you have recorded the experiences of the first generation of Israel in the wilderness, while the rest of the book describes the experiences of the second generation. In Numbers chapter 13, we'll begin reading verse 25 down through verse 4 of chapter 14. And they returned from searching the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel into the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. And the Amalekites dwell in the land to the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness? And wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, and that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return unto Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain, and let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And then if you go over to chapter 32, this is the second generation. Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and Eleazar the priest and the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibeon and Jazer and Nimrah and Heshbon and Eliah and Shebam and Nebo and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle. And thy servants have cattle. Wherefore, said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. So these two passages speak of two separate incidents, separated by 39 years. Two different generations of Israelites failing to reach the land of Canaan, failing to reach the land and the life that God had promised them. And these things are written for our learning. I want to speak this morning on failed spiritual conquest. Failed spiritual conquest. First of all, consider the position of God's people in these two incidents. The background of these two passages goes back to the fact that God had promised to give the children of Israel the land of Canaan, a land flowing with milk and honey. We read of that promise in Exodus chapter 3, verse 8, verse 17. It's repeated, of course, throughout Exodus, throughout Deuteronomy. In Numbers 13, the children of Israel have arrived at the border of the land and life promised to them of God. They're right at the border. And in Deuteronomy 1 and verse 21, Moses exhorted them at this time, behold, the Lord thy God hath set the land before thee. Go up and possess it. Fear not, neither be discouraged. And then in the text in Numbers chapter 32, about 39 years later, a new generation has arrived in the highlands of the Transjordan area, very grassy place, place of rolling hills and valleys. And again, right before them is the land and the life promised to them by God. And in both cases, Numbers 13, Numbers 32, Israel fails to enter the promised land. Right before them is the opportunity for everything to be different in their lives. And in both cases, they fail. In both cases, a good land. A land flowing with milk and honey. It's right there. It's right before them. There it is. right before them, the promised land, the land of Canaan. For the child of God today is a picture of the possession and the enjoyment of God's best on earth. And God's best on earth is right there. It's right before us. Possess it is the command of the Lord. It is a symbol of a better and more enjoyable life on this earth. The land of Canaan represents going forth at the command of God and witnessing God conquer His enemies and ours. It is a picture of a higher plane of Christian living. It is a picture of life in fellowship with God, a life walking in the light of His countenance, a life of having daily communion with the Lord. And it's right there. It's right before us at this very moment. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 10 and 11. We see that it is a place of great and goodly cities, which thou buildest not, houses full of good things, which thou fillest not, wells digged, which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees, which thou plantest not. That is a picture of the enjoyment of the blessings of God upon our lives. It is a picture of the enjoyment of grace in our lives. Houses that you did not build. Wells that you did not dig. That's grace. And this land of Canaan is a picture of that life. It represents the spiritually abundant life. A land of flourishing. Spiritually, it represents for you and I living life in the peace and the joy and the power and the victory and the glory of the Lord. It is a taste of heaven upon earth. It is the best possible life that you and I can live upon this earth. And in both of our texts, though the people had the promise of God, and so do we, and with the possession of such promises right before them, it's in their grasp, they fail. They fail. And the record of such serves as a picture and instruction of you and I, of God's people. The promised blessings of God are right before us. A better and more enjoyable way of life right before us. A higher plane of spiritual living right before us. And like us, the children of Israel remain in the wilderness, wandering in circles. And we are warned in Hebrews 4 in verse 1, let us fear. Let us fear. Lest a promise being left us of entering into His rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. We're warned. People talk all the time about how foolish Israel was for 40 years, really 39, wandering in the wilderness. How foolish. And yet God's people do it all the time. The promise is right there. It's there every single day. And the command to go in and possess it is there every single day. And most fail to enter into that promise. And they live their lives wandering in a wilderness. So let's look at Israel's failure to possess God's promise. In the text in Numbers 13, the people failed to possess the promise of God and the blessed life that was right before them. The question is, why? Why did they fail to possess what was right before them? How did they miss this opportunity? The writer of Hebrews in Hebrews 3 and verse 12 records the cause of such failure. He says it was an evil heart of unbelief. That's why they did not enter in Numbers 13. They had an evil heart of unbelief. They failed to possess what was right before them. And they would remain in the wilderness for the next 39 years because of unbelief. Because of an evil heart of unbelief. Now looking at Numbers 13, we see the terrible results of their unbelief. When Moses said to the people, "Behold, the Lord thy God has set the land before thee. Go in and possess it. Fear not, neither be discouraged." They responded. Here was their response. "Moses, just wait a minute. We've been talking, and we think it would be best to send in spies to scout out the land. Because before we're going to go into that land, we want to know what kind of land it is." Well, God already told them. They were saying, "Moses, Aaron, we want to check this out. We want to be sure before we do what God says." That's what they're saying. That's unbelief. They were expressing, they're not honest enough to come right out and say it, but they were expressing, "We prefer to see with our physical eyes than to trust what God says. We got to see this for ourselves." In Numbers 13, verses 4 through 15, we see the list of the men that were chosen to go and spy out the land. And it's worth noting in verse 8 and verse 16 that Moses changed the name of Hosea. The word Hosea means salvation. And he changed that name to Jehoshua. That's Joshua. But he changed it from salvation to "The Lord is our salvation." And by so doing, he sent a message to each of those 12 spies. No matter what you see in that land, remember, the Lord is our salvation. The Lord is our deliverer. So that simple name change sends a message. But because of unbelief, the message fell. The act fell on deaf ears. Oh, how many a message falls on deaf ears because of unbelief. After 40 days of scouting out the land, the spies return. They have with them a great abundance of fruit. And we see in verse 26 that they showed them the fruit of the land. And in verse 27 we hear them saying, "This is the fruit of it." And no doubt the people were in awe of what they were seeing. And you can hear them saying amongst themselves, "Have you ever seen grapes like that? Look at that. That's amazing." And then all of a sudden in verse 28, the 10 spies say, "Nevertheless, just wait a minute, don't get too excited. Nevertheless," that's a word indicative of the fact that there was a problem. "Yes, this is amazing fruit, but there's a problem. Nevertheless." And then notice verse 28 and 29. "The people, be strong that dwell in the land, And the cities are walled and very great. And besides that, we saw the children of Anak there. Giant people. And then he goes on and mentions the other enemy nations. Through their unbelief, they are making void the Word of God. The Word of God means nothing to them at this point. Nothing. The only thing they're dwelling on is what they were saying. The people, the congregation of Israel, became greatly disappointed. They become uneasy. They became fearful. They became agitated. And we know that from verse 30 because we read, and Caleb stilled the people. Caleb calmed the people down. They were in hysteria. And Caleb was able to calm them down by saying, we are well able to overcome it. Yes, there are these obstacles, but God has promised to give us the land. We are able. And while all that was going on, the 10 spies continued with their report. And they said in verse 31, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And then in verses 32 and 33, they further describe the land to the people. The spies, with the exception of Caleb and Joshua, were measuring the difficulties by human strength. Why? That's what unbelief does. That's what unbelief always does. Through unbelief, their vision and their thought process was greatly distorted. And all they can see is the giants. All they can see is the difficulties. All they can see is the obstacles. And they're stuck there. There is the land of promise. There is a better life. It's right before them. And they're stuck on the giants and all the obstacles. And they could not get past these. And as a result, they are paralyzed, they are held, they are confined by what they are seeing with the physical eye and with their thought process. And we hear them say, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. Due to their unbelief, they were oblivious to God, oblivious to the promise of God, oblivious to the fact that the land was right there. It had no impact upon them. It was their unbelief that was impacting them at this time. Because of unbelief, they did not see the value, the true value of the blessing that was right before them. And the spies, with the exception of Caleb and Joshua, due to their unbelief, were under the control and under the sway of mere physical sight. And the promise of a blessed life meant nothing. They are of a defeatist attitude. We be not able to go up against the people. They are stronger than we. They're not stronger than God, but they've lost complete sight of the Lord. That's unbelief. And it's evil, an evil heart of unbelief. With the exception of Caleb and Joshua, these spies possessed with a spirit of unbelief became deadly poison to the people of God. Unbelief is a deadly poison. Those possessed with unbelief are a deadly poison to the children of God. The report of these spies caused great commotion amongst God's people. Again, Caleb stilled the people. We read in chapter 14 and verse 1, all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. And they wept, which is more intense than crying, that night. Unbelief caused them unnecessary sorrow and concern. Oh, that we would realize the unnecessary sorrow and concern we bring into our lives simply because we do not believe. They brought into their lives unnecessary sorrow and concern. We read in chapter 14 and verse 2 that the people murmured against Moses and against Aaron. Unbelief caused them to be disgruntled and discontent. We read in verses 2 through 4 of chapter 14 that their thinking is absolutely absurd. They said, "Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt. We'd have been better off if God never saved us." That's absurd. Unbelief is absurd. And then they said, began to question God. Why did God bring us out of this land? Why did God save us if this is where it ends? To fall by the sword? Did God bring us this far to kill us and leave our wives and our children as prey? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? And then we see in the next verse they began to make plans to go back into Egypt. We were better off in Egypt than we are here. That's unbelief. Again, my worst day as a child of God is better than my best day when I was unsaved. And that's always so. Unbelief caused great discontent, and their thinking was just absurd. We read in verses 4 through 6 that Moses, Aaron, and Caleb, and Joshua fell on their faces before God in prayer. And following this, in verses 7 through 9, they spoke to the people of the goodness of what was before them. They said it is an exceeding good land. And then they warned them, only rebel not. Do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land. And then they encouraged them by saying, the Lord is with us. But their unbelief filled them with resentfulness. Unbelief is resentful. You tell somebody that's filled with unbelief to trust God, you want to see somebody get angry. Unbelief is filled with resentfulness. And what did they do in verse 10? But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. Why? All they said was, we can do this. The Lord is with us. And their response is, kill them. Oh, the resentfulness of unbelief. The end result was they failed to possess what was right before them. And they remained in the wilderness for the next 39 years because of unbelief. And the sad truth is, many of God's people, we're talking about people who have been justified by the grace of God. People that have passed from death unto life, have been reconciled to God, redeemed by the blood of Jesus Christ, redeemed from the curse of the law, delivered from eternal death and the power of darkness. We're talking about a people who have been made the sons and the daughters of God. We're talking about a people whose names are in the Lamb's Book of Life. And right before them is a life of spiritual abundance, a life of blessed fellowship, a life of personal relationship with God. A life of peace, a life of growth, a life of joy, a life of power and victory. It's right there. But because of unbelief, they remain in the wilderness, going in circles, losing the battle every day. They're God's people.
Right before them is a life of victory. And every day they lose the battles and live lives of defeat. The reason is the same. Unbelief. Unbelief. In the text in Numbers 32, it's now been approximately 39 years later. A new generation of Israelites. The problem is they learned from the other generation. A new generation of Israelites has reached the border of the promised land. The border of a blessed life. It's right there. It's right before them. They are told in Numbers 33 and 53, "For I have given you the land to possess it. I have given you the land." There it is. Possess it. The abundant life of Canaan was right there. Here they are. A people. A people chosen of God. A people that has been brought through a dry and sandy desert. They've been brought through desolation. They've been brought through all kinds of troubles and distresses and difficulties and sufferings in miraculous ways. And God in His grace and mercy and long-suffering has provided for them all the way. And after decades of lingering and wandering in the desert, living their lives below what it could be. Living their lives below what it could be. And now they are in the highlands of the Transjordan. And there it is, right before them, is the Jordan River. And on the other side of that river is God's promise. A blessed life. Spiritual abundance. Just on the other side of that river. God's best for them is right there. They've been blood-bought, delivered, and rescued. But the tribes of Reuben and Gad make a shocking request of Moses. Verse 5, "Bring us not over Jordan." Bring us not over Jordan. After decades of wandering, they have finally arrived, and just beyond that river is God's glorious promise. And it's theirs. But you have this stunning request of Reuben and Gad. Bring us not over Jordan. They are saying, we realize that the promise is over there. But Moses, you got to understand, we don't want to leave here. Now, if you can somehow bring the promise here, we'll take it. That's how many of God's people live their lives today. Yes, the promise is right over there, but I'm not leaving here. This is where I want to be. They are saying to Moses, "Moses, we want to stay here. Moses, we want to settle here. Moses, we would rather stay here than pursue what God has for us on the other side. We want to stay here." And the reason? They had been noticing for several days that where they were was very attractive area. And as they looked at that area, they began to figure that it would be very advantageous to them. We see that in verses 1 and 4. We have cattle. And man, this is a good land for cattle. We can prosper financially here. Therefore, Moses, we don't want to leave. Their request was based entirely upon material factors. This also is due to unbelief. To them, it was simply a matter of economics. Anytime your spiritual life comes down to a matter of economics, you have failed. You have failed to enter the land. Economics and convenience was now in the way of a truly blessed life. How many times economics and convenience get in the way of the life that is right there? It's right there. But economics and convenience get in the way. To them, life had now become all about their material needs and desires and their lifestyle. And as a result, they say, we want to stay here. After all, we can raise a lot of cattle here and secure our financial future. Bring us not over Jordan. And I'm sure, as it is today, they may have said, we'll just stay here a little while. But we got to take advantage of this. After all, God allowed this. It must be His will. God's will is for you to cross over and enjoy the life that He has placed for you. God's best. That's God's will. But they wanted to stay. On the other side was God's best. But they began to minimize. They began to trivialize the spiritual blessing that was right before them. And they were willing to settle for the temporal in the place of the spiritual. You know how many folks have done that? Settled for the temporal rather than the spiritual. They were saying, because this land is so advantageous to our financial security, Moses, we'll just stay right here. God's best right before them. They would say, we'd rather stay on this side of Jordan. We'd rather enjoy the materialism over here than God's best over there. We would rather raise our children over here than over there. We'd rather build our families over here than over there. Oh, it happens over and over and over again. Vast number of God's people today have failed to possess a life of spiritual abundance, a blessed life of fellowship and personal relationship with God, a life of peace and growth, joy and power and victory, because they see more value. They see more importance in the temporal than the spiritual. It's sad. It's sad. Right before them are the blessed promises of God. Right before them are God's best for them. I've had people tell me, Brother Dan, I know what's best for my family. Obviously you don't, if you're going to stay on this side of Jordan rather than crossing over. You may think you do, but you don't. And these people thought they knew what was best. for them. And they choose to live on the wrong side of Jordan. How many people have chosen to live on the wrong side of Jordan? They get married on the wrong side of Jordan. They build their homes on the wrong side of Jordan. They raise their children on the wrong side of Jordan. That's a disaster. Notice what Moses said to him. Be sure your sin will find you out. Be sure your sin will find you out. You choose to live on the wrong side of Jordan, be sure of this, your sin will find you out. You choose to marry on this side of Jordan rather than God's side, be sure your sin will find you out. You choose to raise your children on the wrong side of Jordan, be sure your sin will find you out. Oh, I can't figure it out. Why my children don't have no interest in spiritual things? Because you raised them on the wrong side of Jordan. Be sure your sin will find you out. People don't appreciate that when you tell them. Just as I'm sure they didn't appreciate it when Moses said, be sure. If this is what you want to do, be sure your sin will find you out. Oh, how sad. They settle. God's best is right there. It's right there. And they settle for less than God's best. How foolish. Oh, that we would not become a people who get so near to the promises of God but never leave the wilderness. The promises of God are right there, and we stay in the wilderness defeated. Oh, may we not be like the children of Israel, wandering between Egypt and the promised land. We're to live our life in Canaan, in the promises of God. A lot of people take comfort. Well, at least I didn't go all the way back to Egypt. Got to give me some credit for that. No, I really don't. Because you're supposed to cross over and live on the other side. How foolish it is to try to live somewhere between God's best and the world. And yet, sadly, that's what many, many do. May we never settle for a life short of the God-promised life. We never settle for less. It's right there. It's before us every single day. The question is, will you possess it today? Someone says, well, you know that there's giants. There's obstacles. I would, but there's this giant. Go forward and possess it. God is with you. It's a matter of trusting the Lord. What a wonderful life we have. God saved our soul. And He's left us here, and we have a wonderful, wonderful life right before us. It's there every day. As we've said many times, I may fail miserably today. I may fail miserably today. But when I wake up tomorrow, you know what? That life is right there. God's best for me is right there. How foolish it is to repeat the mistakes of yesterday. And pretty soon you do that enough days, guess what? It's your life. It's your life. But it's right there every day. Oh God, give me the faith to cross over and enter into God's very best. For me. What a wonderful life we have. Brother Larry, if you come and lead us in verse song.